This is Kathy Whelan. Today's date is December 2nd, 1972. The time is 1 o'clock 8 p.m. I will be interviewing Miss Catherine Lewis of Freeland. Topics to be discussed are the early school system and the changes in the community. When did they move the post office down here? When did they move the post office?
From Loretta?
Yeah.
Well, the town was organized in 1867. And that was because when they put the railroads here, the Fair Marquette Railroad, it was so far from Loretta. You see, this river road angles like this. And then when the railroad came to, it came to where it is now. And it was much nearer this place than it was Loretta, but maybe a mile and a half out of Loretta. And that's really what turned the tide, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then there was kind of a shady political deal. I've read that in the county history. Just what it was, I don't know.
Were you born here? Yeah, don't let it bother you. Nobody will hear but me.
What did you ask?
Were you born here?
In this house?
Well, I mean, like, you're in this area?
I was born in Tittlewasa Township.
Yeah, last I meant in this area. Yeah.
I lived in the house. Oh, I forgot to tell you, too. And Loretta, there was the Loretta Hotel. They had quite a big-sized hotel. See, this used to be the main thoroughfare, and it was in the logging days, too. And Tittabawassee was one of the biggest logging streets in the whole state of Michigan. I have a record here someplace of the number of the billion feet of logs that went at right of its length to on this river.
I know my dad used to pull logs out of the river.
Some would say they're logs, but yeah, they're eggheads, they call them.
Yeah.
Of course, my folks lived in logging days, lumbering days.
Was that pretty well fast when
this,
you were young?
This here, Tittabawassee River area was the leading producer of logs in Michigan. The first boom was started by Joseph Whittier in 1856. In 8 years, 1 billion, 700 million feet of logs were wrapped down the river to the Saginaw sawmills. The Bahamut sawmill was located in the Tittabawassee Township on the Fairmont Cliff, Fairmont Cliff River. In 1881, this mill provided the main place of employment other than farming. Logging played an important part in the economy of the community, since there are still a few men working here who farmed in summers and work the northern logging camps in winters. My Uncle John Hancock was one of those. He had a big farm, and he kept 12 or 15 men year-round. And in the summer, you see, they worked the farm with horses, they worked at the senior year. And then in the winter, he left two or three of them to do the chores and cap and so on. And then the rest of them, he took up to the logging camp.
I didn't even know, I knew that there was a lot of farming in the area, but I didn't know that they carried on all the city at
that's about all there was, you see, then, farming and the logging. And the logging industry began to decline in 1895. organized 1857 to build the railroads south and west of the Saginaw Valley. It crossed our township in 1867, and the name was changed to Pure Marquette in 1900, and then in 1947 it changed it to the Chesapeake and Ohio, which it is still called. And the original Freedom Station was built in 1867, and I was surprised that Sunday that your folks took me out to see the new church.
Oh, yeah?
When you came back, I noticed that the old railroad station was built. I didn't know that.
Really?
Of course, that wasn't the original. But the original one.
Where was it?
In the same place. But that was just a blank space there. And I mentioned it when we came to it.
I guess I haven't noticed.
I was kind of sorry because all of our old landmarks are going like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 1881 records show two villages in Kittabawassee Township, Kittabawassee and Ravetta, both near the river on the east side.
Did they use the railroad for their logging? Use the railroad for the logging, like it comes. Did they use the railroad for the logging?
Well, no, I think most of the logs went down the river.
That's
they had a lot of river. Then after they after the town then here was organized, of course, the veterans faded away, I suppose. Woman by the name of Mammy Freeland, and she kept a book down there on this side of the wood. And at that time, everybody just called this place Kittabawassee. But these lumbermen and rivermen used to stop there. I guess they used to have supply of friends. But so often, they'd get down there. They'd get their pay up at the camp, and then they would stop and, you know, have rough times. But anyway, they began calling the place Supreme. And so later on, it was officially changed by the government to the name of Freeman.
Yeah.
That's where it got its name from, Manny Freeman.
At the bank, they had that picture, I think it was taken in, what was it, 19? Oh, it was way back. Anyway, they still had a picture of the motel on the field. I guess where the standard station is.
That's where it got its name. The first township meeting in 1841, this is all by my grandfather, Dr. Bates Lewis, was the supervisor.
Huh?
He was supervisor for 7 days.
Huh.
And then he called it this in 1901 and 1903. So it's been 3 years. This is what I have on Loretta. At first, Loretta was the main settlement that was 1 mile south of our present community on M-47 in Pierce Road. It consisted of J. Post Office, the Jacob Store, the Hotel, a blacksmith shop, a council lady, and a few houses. A stagecoach. And since the road was rough traveling, horses were changed at Loretta. The J. Post Office, his name is Mr. Jefferson Jacob, in whose house it was located. It consisted of a high-top desk with pigeonholes switched on the mail. During the Civil War, all mail for this area came to J. Post Office. I have letters from there in my possession. In the second cluster of backwoods houses lived George Truesdale, who, with some of his friends, worked a shady political move that moved J. Post Office to his 1867. This settlement was called Tittabawassee, but that wasn't official. It had a woman popularly known as Mamie Creel, who kept a tavern on the riverbank. Of course, this was during the logging days, and this tavern was frequented by lumberjacks and rural men alike, who named the settlement Freeman. In later years, the United States government changed the name Jay to Freeman. The Pierre Marquette Railroad mentioned earlier passed closer to Freeman than Loretta, and that turned the scales in favor of Freeman. Freeland was served by riverboats, stagecoach, and railroad. 3.5 miles down the river, people could cross the river by a ferry operated by Captain Rivers. For a while, a second ferry crossed the river at Pierceville, 1 mile south of Freeland. Horry Crampton operated this ferry. Another means of crossing the river was by canoes and by walking the logs in spring. Those logs used to just be jammed in so thick, you know, that people wouldn't walk across. I heard my mother and father tell about that. Farmers used to paddle down the river to plant, to have grain grown, just to plant. I've always heard that for a while.
Wow, that's quite a trip.
They were happy when Samuel Shattuck started the first mill in Shattuckville down near the county hospital. The first Freeland road bridge of wood construction was built in 1870. Then a steel bridge was built in 1895.
Is that the one that goes across?
No. And a new bridge was built about 1958.
You mentioned Shattuckville. It used to be a little town.
Right.
Down near Saginaw, they had Shattuckville.
It was a little town. You know where it turns out. Uh-huh. And it kind of angles around. And they had a mill. And quite a few industrial houses.
Now it's just kind of gulped up and say, yeah.
They had a grist mill here at the one time, right up just about where our park building is.
Oh.
Farmers used to take their wheat and bring them head down. And the churches, belief in God had a great influence on the history of our community. The Freeland Methodist Church was first Sunday schooled by Joseph King 2 years after he had settled here along with the Grays River. In 1846, he invited the neighbors to worship in his log cabin. His cabin in winter and log barn in the summer housed worshipers for 8 years until 1854, when the King Schoolhouse was built on land donated by his son, Noble King. And that's where Dr. Osteen's house stands now. That's the first schoolhouse. There was no bridge then, so members crossed the river in canoes to attend services. Later, services were held in the Munger School west of the river. Elder Jackson, part Indian, interpreted for the Indians, because there used to be quite a big Indian reservation down here, too, and a lot of Indians attended these services.
Was that in the late 1800s? Was that in the late 1800s?
Well, by the time that this was 1846 when this man started. Eleventh Circuit was argued. Including King School. And Rufus Payne was the first circuit rider minister. Circuit riders, you see, they went from one church to another and preached. These churches weren't any able at the time to support themselves, mm-hmm. and so that's the way they did, mm-hmm. banded together. And they circuit riders served until 1870, at which time the parishioners felt they could support a minister of their own. The first church was built on land donated by Noble King at a cost of $3,000.
Oh, wow. Well, that was a lot back then.
The next church cost $22,000. The first parsonage was built in 1880, and the present one in 1911. And then the present church was built in 1918-19, and a Sunday school building was added to that church in 1957. And just the Sunday school addition cost $56,000.
Wow.
So you can see. At first, people could buy land at $2 an acre, but it didn't seem to happen. They had this church. Dates back to 1867, this year there's not the giving his argument. An Adventist gave lectures at the schoolhouse and aroused so much interest. Across 2nd Street from the township building,
yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
For that vacant lot. Well, that's where the Adventist church is.
Huh.
It was there in my day, I remember that.
Well, I should get rid of them in a hurry.
The church began in November with local elders, and by December, was vaguely organized with 50 worshippers. That's the Adventists.
Mm-hmm.
Then the Freeland Christian Congregational Church. Before the organization of this church, a group of people held services in Sunday school in the Seventh-day Adventist building on Church Street. They let them have their help before their services there. Reverend Jacob H. Lewis, my grandfather, filled the pulpit. During the winter of 1890 and 91, the group organized, and on the evening of February 23rd, 1891, public services were held in the Adventist Church. That's where the congregation is. About 21 members united with the church. The next year, in 1892, the church building was built on its present site on 3rd Street. That's the one we're in now.
1892?
Mm-hmm.
1892? Wow.
It has the name on it up there on the In 1893, there were 135 members. That used to be a big church.
Wow, more than there is now.
I've seen it. We used to have, in my day, they had wall seats that were pulled up, you know, mm-hmm. even when they left home. And they went all the way around down three sites. And I've seen those wall at every seat, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
They used to have a big church. Reverend J.H. Lewis, he's mentioned so much, you see, he was a supervisor, and he was the first teacher in the field.
Oh, yeah?
minister, he preached for the county, I think, 7 years.
Hmm.
He served, yes, until 1897, he served as pastor. The parsonage was built in 1905, until that time, the pastor lived in Randy Posey. And the Church of God was organized about 1894, in services in the Hunger School, which was located on the North River Road. Well, it's right in the house, right where Mrs. Mills lives now.
Oh, yeah?
I never knew that until I read this in some history.
Hmm.
It was built in logs. There were 25 or 30 in attendance. In winter, services were held in members' homes. They reorganized in 1915, and then their first church in Kibwaza Township was built in 1948. At the corner of North River and Freedom Village, that's the one that they're on. So that's the church history of the place.
Mm.
The early settlers were also interested in education for their children. There were 4 schools in the township before the Civil War.
Wow.
Freedom, Monger, Basso, and Wellman.
Hmm.
The first school in Freedom was built with logs. It was built by Joseph King in 1854 on the site where Dr. Bushman was born. The first teacher was Jacob H. Lewis. In 1872, a two-story school building was constructed on Church Street between 2nd and 3rd Streets.
Hmm. Wow, that thing's old.
As the land became clear, that would be the two-story building, right? As the land became clear, farming was the principal occupation. Of course, all the farm work was done with horses. It was necessary to have horses shod in the winter to prevent them from falling on icy roads. So Freeland had 1 or 2 blacksmith shops. The Nimrodes had a grocery store on Main Street. Groceries were brought in by trains and riverboats. One boat was named the Belle Seymour. In those days, very little food was packaged. Flour, sugar, oatmeal, crackers, and so forth were all sold in bulk. They were brought here in barrels and kegs, and then the storekeeper would weigh and sell whatever quantity a customer wanted. Up at the east end of the town near the river was a stave mill where barrels and kegs were made. That was before me. And later there was a grist mill on the east bank of the river above where the Veterans Memorial Park building stands. There the farmers have their wheat and corn ground with flour and meal. This was a big improvement over the earlier days. Giving her the buildings in the town. Then too there was Manny Freeland's tavern, which was patronized largely by lumberjacks and rivermen. From what some of the early settlers said, these men had some pretty rough wild times. So with the schoolhouse, 3 churches, a store, a depot, blacksmith shop, stave mill, and a grist mill, and a few houses, that made up the town of early Freeland.
Did the kids go to school like they do now at 9 months, or did they have to help on the farms then, or what?
Well, I don't know. When I was going to school, we always had 10 months.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm. We always had 10 months until they took in these, all of these kids, all of these different schools, and they got younger. They had been having 9 months in the country. We had had 10, and so they compromised and had the 9 months in the camp. And then the schoolhouse that was built in 1867 served the community until the brick building was built in 1914. And now I see they want to demolish that. They don't think it's a...
Which one?
They don't think it was, you know, the one that's been used by the fourth grade.
where you used to teach, like when I was going there?
Well, I began in the old that was built in 1914.
It doesn't seem that outdated.
Then, of course, they built a new school, and they've had to use that on account of the big enrollment. But they claim now that it would take so much money, really, to fix it up.
No, is that the two-story you're talking about, or the newer one? The two-story building you're talking about they want to demolish?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was built in 1914. That's considered quite a nice school, you know, the one they had.
I suppose it would have been.
And then, this one that served until the brick building, built in 1914, was sold to the Oddfellas for their lodge building. And then in recent years, it was demolished to make room for our present concert office in Clareville. And then, only there, I attended the old two-story frame schoolhouse for 10 years, and then finished high school at Arthur Hill in Saginaw. For several years, only the two lower rooms were used, and they were Des primary and primary. Second floor was all one room, used for entertainments and a lodge room. We were told they kept a goat up there that the new member being initiated into the lodge had to ride. And of course, we young children believed it. Later, all three rooms were used for classrooms. The students were seated at stationary double desks, and the teacher's desk was on a raised platform. A big stove stoked with coal stood in the center of the room, and there were three heat zones, frigid, temperate, and torrid, depending on how far or near one sat. Later, a jacket was built on the stove for better circulation of heat. A water pail and dipper stood on a shelf or bench in the hall. On extremely hot days, two boys were allowed to pass the water pail around, so each child quenched his thirst. Imagine, they'd dip the liquor in, drink out of it, and then put it back up over the didn't drink, and then they'd pass it all around. A large bell hung in the belfry, and the teacher rang it several times each day. The first bell at 8:30 a.m., and then at 9, when the session began. Recess came at 10:30. Bell calling us in at 10:45. Afternoon session began at 1 o'clock, so a few claps, a few minutes before 1, and then again at 1, and then afternoon recess for 2:30, and the bell calls back at 2:45. No one rather came conscious of bells.